You're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest is Richard Perez, who is the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Rich, welcome to Profiles.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So talk to me a little bit about how you first became involved with theater.
That's a great question. I came to it kind of late for most, compared to most of the folks that I know that were doing it from the time they could walk. I actually took a class on a dare in my junior year of high school. Actually, I'm the one that made the dare when my brother was coming into high school and I was helping him pick his classes. And something in me must have wanted to do this because the dare was, hey, if you take that class, I'll take it. And then we can both be there together and, you know, that kind of thing. And he ended up taking the class and hating it. And I just loved it. I completely sort of blossomed in taking that first theater class. And I started out as a real vivacious kid and very gregarious. But when my father passed away when I was 9, I sort of did an about face and became very introverted. And it wasn't until then that I really sort of found myself and was able to be more expressive and felt like I found a home when I took that first acting class.
Where was high school?
Fremont, California.
And Fremont is just, it's in the Bay Area,
it
right?
It is, correct, right.
And what did you, you said that that class sort of let you find yourself again after a long introverted period. What was it that clicked for you? Can you remember back?
I really think it was about, first and foremost, it was hearing people laugh. I really, that to me was a form of acceptance. And it really was a visceral memory of when I was small, and that's what I love to do. You know, I got my first pop-up joke book when I think I was six, and you know, those, my family got really tired of just hearing me tell these dumb jokes like, why do birds fly south for the winter? Because it's too far to walk. I just thought that was the funniest joke on earth. And hearing that laughter again and doing something to get an immediate response from the audience was very exciting to me. And I felt, again, that I had found people who got me.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Did you continue to take acting classes then the rest of high school and into college?
I did. And it was really in college that I realized that it was something I wanted to do. Forever. I almost to the point of like, I blew off all my other classes. I always wanted to be in the theater. I had really found a home. And so went to community college for a couple years and then realized I was getting all that I could get from those classes and wanted to move on. And so auditioned for an acting school in L.A. and ended up in New York.
Wait, can you explain that one? So you auditioned for acting school in L.A. but
right.
Went to New York.
I will explain that. The Strasberg Institute, which is where I went to school, had two schools, one in Los Angeles and one in New York. And because I was closer to the L.A. school, I flew down there with my best friend and we had an interview and we were accepted. And so I went back to the Bay Area and I was talking to one of my professors and I told him what had happened and how excited I was. And he said, well, why are you going to L.A.? And he said, you love theater. You know, New York's the place to be. And it was a no-brainer for me. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. And I immediately, you know, altered my plans to end up in the Big Apple.
So when you started, it was acting that you were drawn to more than directing or scenery or any of the technical aspects of theater. What pulled you into directing, or was that a long way away from there?
Well, more than anything, I think I'm in love with the process of theater. And directing was a natural outgrowth of my acting. I felt like I always wanted to know every aspect of it because it was just going to make me a better artist. So slowly, while I was in New York looking for acting work and getting jobs, and I was always fascinated by the director and watching their process and how that and wondered if I could do it. And slowly but surely people would ask me, just because nobody else was around, to come in and maybe look at a piece, or they needed somebody to fill in as a director for somebody else, and just really began to love that process also. So and I, you know, just being in the theater to me was important. So it didn't always necessarily matter how I was there. It was just being part of that organic process.
So what years was it that you were studying with the Strasbourg, the Strasbourg Institute in New York?
I was there from about 1983 till about 1986. And then one of my teachers started a private class, and he invited me to be part of that. And so I went and studied with him, and then I moved out of New York for a while to become an apprentice at the Actors Theater Louisville, not too far from here.
So let's go back to thinking of yourself in the Strasbourg Institute. What are some of the things that really stand out to you as things that you've carried with you that you learned during that time period?
I think the most important thing I learned while I was at the Strasbourg Institute was the fact that you never stop learning as an artist, but especially as a creative, as an actor and as somebody who is constantly working on their craft, because so much comes from you. And so you can get to a certain point as far as craft goes, but also as you live your life, you have more to bring to the work and to your characters, and hopefully it's they become more complex, more rich, and that's what I love about it. Whenever I learn something new about myself, Rich, I can bring that to a character. If I'm working on Williams, or I'm working on Mamet, or I'm working on Wasserstein, you know, I can always draw from something, an experience that I've had, and to this day that holds true. I feel the more experience I've had in life, the better actor I become. At least I hope so.
You're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest this evening is Rich Perez, the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Rich, talk to me a little bit. I'll ask you in a little bit about how you ended up specifically in Bloomington, but I know that at the Bloomington Playwrights Project, you get to work a lot with new plays as well as with some established works. Can you talk a little bit about what are some of the differences between approaching a first-time production and something that's more established like Williams?
Sure. The wonderful thing about working on new plays is that it's, I feel for the playwright anyway, and that I am helping to usher in their new child. So it's like giving birth, you know. I often feel like I'm a doctor who's helping this child come into the world. And I think a lot of playwrights talk about it that way, that, you know, giving something its feet, so to speak. And it's really wonderful, you know, to be sitting next to a playwright and watching their words come to life for the first time on opening night. I mean, they'll see it in rehearsal, and that's wonderful. And they'll do rewrites and that kind of thing. But it's when those lights come down and then they come back up and their words come to life with actors in a full production that it's just so exciting. And I think the difference is it's all new. So everything everybody brings to the table, it's a new discovery. Whereas a more established work, you can do research and you can Google this, or you can go to a book and read about the first production or the subsequent productions. But this new work is so surprising because you never know what to expect.
So how close is the relationship between the playwright, the director, and the actors? Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure. Well, again, one of the differences with more established work, you know, you rarely have the playwright in the
room.
Can't
bring Tennessee Williams back.
Exactly. Exactly. Or even somebody who's still alive. You know, often, you know, the work's had it has had a life, and so they're not interested in revisiting that. They're working on new stuff. You know, depending on the playwright, and, you know, as every artist is different, you have a different experience. So that's the other wonderful thing. As I said earlier, I love the process. And sometimes playwrights are very, you know, they don't want to change a word because it's, again, it's their baby and they, you know, they worked hours on hours to find the right word to put in that place. And other times a playwright says, yeah, that's a great thing that actor just brought to it. I'll change the line to fit that, you know. So, again, it's about the process. And so many playwrights are so open to that collaboration with the actors and the director and what each of those people, because it is a collaboration, as you know. So when it's at its best, you also get playwrights who are like, that's the way I see it. Nothing's changing. Let's just get it up. So, and that's valid too.
So as you've had experience as a director, as an actor, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the notion of running a community theater, which is a whole different aspect of things, I think. But what are some of the things that you think about that's highlighted for you in that process of directing or and in that process of acting? You know, what does each person bring to that process?
Well, let's start with the actor. Having started out as an actor, I really trust actors. I think actors are some of the most intelligent people that I've ever met. Often, because they've been doing it for a while. Because it's such a visceral art form that I think, you know, I can watch as a director, I can watch an actor do something and maybe they're not the most experienced actor, but because they're totally connected to that moment, I'll see something that maybe they didn't even intend, but it gives me a clue as to how to open up the text. And then the other extreme is somebody who's been doing it for a long time and just has all these great ideas because they've worked on the great actors, I mean the great playwrights, their works, and have also worked on new plays, you know, and that's part of work, the history of an actor. You know, they work on both. So in that sense, I love to work with actors because I think they're really bright and bring a lot to the table. In terms of working with a director as an actor, I think that's a little tougher because directing is, in many ways, who's ever at the helm, they're sort of driving the ship. And if you trust them, it is smooth waters. If you don't trust them as an actor or as a playwright, then it's a little choppier. And that's tough because it's one person at the helm as opposed to a whole group. And so that's why. And then on top of that, if you're working on new plays, I think it's even a harder ocean to navigate because new plays have very specific demands that, again, a more established play doesn't.
You talked about trusting actors because of their connection to the piece and that forming that visceral connection that you trust them to take that in. What makes you trust a director?
The main thing is that first rehearsal. I think if I walk into a room and a director has done their homework, you immediately know it. Whereas if you walk into the room and a director, if it feels like they're sort of making it up as they go along or they don't have answers to specific questions, and that usually is a hint that they haven't done their homework. And I know as a director, when I'm directing something, I want to be the smartest person in the room, or at least the most informed. Not that everybody else in the room doesn't have incredible things to bring, but I want at least to be able to address their questions in an informed way. So that's really important, I think.
Who are some of your favorite playwrights?
And I get asked this question all the time, and it changes so often.
Yeah.
Miller is a big favorite of mine, and not necessarily the big plays like The Death of a Salesman. I actually am a big fan of All My Sons, A View from the Bridge, some of the lesser known plays that are more complicated maybe, and not as known and definitive, you know, Arthur Miller in the canon as the great works. I actually like plays that aren't perfect, because I think often that gives in the new play sense, it gives room for a little more interpretation, and you can play with that more and begin to re-examine the text in a different way.
It's an interesting
take.
What is it about Miller that pulls you to him?
I feel like Arthur Miller was always asking the big questions. Who are we in the big picture? And especially as, quote, the little man, where do we fit in this big socio-political world that we live in? And he was always concerned about the little guy. And I just really respect that. I mean, and never stopped asking those questions. You know, I don't think he ever We all, at this point, we all know about, you know, his history with HVAC and all those really important times that he lived through.
The House Committee during the McCarthy era.
Yeah. To me, especially somebody who had such a expansive career, that he was always asking those very simple questions. I mean, well, simple and yet extremely complex in the big scheme of things. I think how can you not respect somebody for that? And always and more than that is standing by his principles, even when it wasn't always comfortable to do that.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest is Rich Perez, the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Can you talk a little bit, Rich, about one of your favorite parts that you've ever played?
Sure. I was just in a production at the Waldron of Dinner with Friends. For me, that was one of the most challenging roles I've ever taken on, and also one of the most rewarding. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 2000 or 2001, mm-hmm. I think, and rightly so. It's just on first read, you look at this play, and at least for me, I thought, wow, this is a simple story about two couples who are best friends, and one of the couples decides to break up, and all of a sudden, everybody is forced to examine their relationship.
I just rewatched the movie, yeah. Funnily enough.
Yeah, yeah. And I just think it's so brilliant in its simplicity, the way that Donald Margulies examines these relationships is something that I think everybody can relate to, whether you've been married or whether you've, you know, obviously the love has been written about for centuries. And the way he examines these relationships is just so profound and really forces the actor to go places that aren't always necessarily fun. But if you can get there, and hopefully we did at times, I think we did, then it's really a great ride for the artist and also for the audience.
Which role did you play?
Gabe.
Who
in the movie was the Dennis Quaid role.
And that's the guy who stays in the marriage.
Yes, he does. I mean, he's best friends with the man who leaves. What I love about the role is that he is really everything that he's going through is internalized. So you never quite know where he stands because he's being pulled in two ways. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, he's on some deep level understands where his friend is going and why he has to do what he does. But then it forces him to look at his own relationship and why he stayed or why he, you know, all those really important questions that we all ask when we're in a relationship, let alone very long-term relationship, I think.
And one of the most poignant lines in the movie that he said that stood out to me, and I can't remember if it's the same in the play or not, is when they must be in their 40s as mm-hmm. at one point as it goes through the years. And he says, "My sweet wife is now in middle age." Mm-hmm. And it just sort of stops and gets very quiet mm-hmm. as he sort of looks back and reevaluates 20 years together.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really great stuff.
As always on Profiles, we ask our guests to bring along a favorite piece of music. And one piece that you chose was Heaven by Los Lonely Boys. Talk a little bit to me about why that's one of your favorite pieces.
I think first, it's just wonderful, lively music. And because they're a Mexican-American group and I grew up with more traditional Mexican music, the fact that they fused it into a more contemporary sound is so wonderful for me because I get the best of both worlds, this rock and roll kind of kick to it. And at the same time, sort of reconnected to my roots, if you will. You know.
We're going to listen to Heaven by Los Lonely Boys.
See you.
We've been listening to Heaven by Los Lonely Boys, and you're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest is Rich Perez, the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Rich, you originally hail from the Bay Area. You studied in New York. You ended up in Louisville for a stint. How'd you get to Bloomington?
Like many of us, a woman or a man. I did my graduate work at at Arizona State. Once I left New York, I went there and met a woman. And she, we had a wonderful 2 years in my last 2 years there. And then she was an undergrad, and she's also involved in theater. And she was accepted to IU in the theater department. So that narrows it down. I won't get specific. I was headed back to California to start my own theater company. So we went our separate ways, and it was really tough, just as anybody knows who's been in a long-term relationship and has to, for career or whatever reason, has to go their separate ways. And so it was one of those things where we'd be talking on the phone every day, missing each other, even though we knew we couldn't be together. And then this moment happened on September 11th in the year 2001. And it was one of those, I mean, I think for a lot of people, there was a lot of things changed in those moments. And I remember watching it on television and in my mind thinking, okay, this is it. Life's too short. I want to go be with her. And within a week, I had sold all my stuff and hopped in my car and drove here. You know, I didn't know what to expect, but I knew that it would work out the way it was supposed to. We were engaged soon after that. Now, the downside of the story is that it didn't work out. But in the meantime, in the interim, I started volunteering at this little theater down on Washington Street.
The BPP, as we finally called the Bloomington Playwrights Project.
And I felt like, well, it's going to be 2 years. I'm starting my own theater company. I'll help out there. And, learn what I can learn. I mean, everything, as I've said, is invaluable when you're trying to do your own thing. And a series of events happened there. The artistic director, for personal reasons, had to go to California to be with his wife. And I had been volunteering there about 6 months, I guess, and doing some pretty cool things. I was I started the Performathon, which was a big fundraiser, which was really successful for us, and was getting to know the board pretty well, and brought some other things to the organization that were helping us, I think, become a better organization. And once he left, however, they did a search, and so it was one of those things. Well, you know, I was still in the relationship, and that would have meant I had to be here longer. So there was a lot of negotiating around that. But in the meantime, I applied for the job, and I was ultimately the board decided to hire me. So, and I've been there ever since. So.
Almost 5 years later,
you
are.
Here I am.
Tell me a little bit about what being the producing artistic director actually involves.
Well, everything from mopping the floors to picking the season and bringing in the artists and all this. And that's always the challenge of working in a small organization like we are. There's four staff, and three of them are paid, and one is a full-time volunteer. The angel Sonia Johnson, who is our development person, is a full-time volunteer.
Wow.
And so for me, even though I have to do the regular things an artistic director does, like put the season together, hire the talent, deal with agents.
Hire the talent? I mean, your actors actually are paid for
rent?
Yes,
they are. And they're given a small stipend, and we try to raise that every year. So, yeah, I know it's
A lot of times community theater is something that there is no remuneration at all other than a couple of full-time
right. and
staff
I,
people,
and I,
which is great that you're recognizing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's my effort and our effort to be more than a community theater. And I want to quantify that because there's nothing wrong with community theater at all. I mean, I've certainly done my share of it. But I think the difference is we're trying to raise the bar to be a professional theater company, whereas I think a community theater is meant, and rightly so, to be for people who just do it as a hobby or and it's fun. So that is one of the reasons we've begun to pay, and we certainly pay our directors more than just a stipend. I mean, I think it's a pretty decent wage for this community.
You put the season together, you work on casting then. Absolutely. And take care of that. Look at a lot of the technicalities, I would imagine, of getting things up.
Absolutely. And as a producing director is a little different because I have a hand in just about everything that it takes to put the show up. So I'm constantly, if I'm not directing the show, I'm certainly working with the director to fulfill their needs. If the actors have a problem, I have to be a go-between there. Also working with the PR person, Rachel Himsel, who's phenomenal, to make sure that we're all on the same page as far as what the poster looks like and, you know, is the text right, and being very specific about what community we're reaching out to for a specific show. Sometimes there, you know, we can do that depending on the show and if there's a specific community that might be interested in that.
The BPP has recently moved to a new home on 9th.
Yeah.
In Bloomington. What were some of the other things? I mean, I think it was more than just moving location. There's been tremendous growth in the BPP over the last 5 years, really.
Absolutely.
And there's been some changes, as you said, I think moving from a community theater to a more professional theater. You were recently cited in, what was it that you were cited, that the BPP was cited in?
Travelocity.
Travelocity is one of the best hidden finds, right, in the Midwest. Talk to me a little bit about some of the conceptual changes that have happened that have brought about those practical changes at the BPP.
Well, if anybody had been a patron at our old space, as wonderful as that space was and as creative as we got working around things like
a pole in the middle of the space
and it being very small and probably mold from, you know, 100 years back and those kind of things. I always loved the intimacy of the space, but I also felt just technically we were limited as to what we could do. Even though, you know, some of the designers that came in that theater found amazing ways to work around that. But I think we always knew, and especially in the last few years when we were taking on bigger projects, that if only we had a theater that could more accommodate the incredible talent that we were bringing into the space, it would behoove everybody. So that was one of the reasons. Also, there was a more practical reason, and that was the landlord was telling us, at least for the last year and a half, that we were probably going to have to move, just because he was thinking of selling the building. And he was always straight up with us, and we had a great relationship with him. And yet at the same time, he said, you know, so keep your eye out there. And so I always was looking for the right place. But as you know, and most people know in Bloomington, space is at a premium. So I had been a patron at the Vertigo space a few times when it was a music venue and always just thought, wow, this would be so cool to transform into a theater. I mean, in essence, it was a theater. I mean, it was a music venue, but it had a stage, you know, a couple stages, and was a great configuration. So one day I was driving down 9th Street and I saw that it was for rent. And so at that point, I thought for sure we had to leave. So I jumped on it and, you know, found out about the price and all those things that you have to look at, and came up with a proposal and took it to the board. And, you know, honestly, they were nervous about it because not only was it a huge move, but also the place had to be renovated. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I think they trusted me enough that if I said I thought we could do it, that we probably could. And to their credit, they agreed to make the move. And I think it's paying off for us.
Talk to me a little bit about Bloomington Playwrights Project relationship with the community. There's lots of aspects. There's the plays that you put on that are the bigger plays. Mm-hmm. you run a contest for new plays to bring mm-hmm. in new playwrights. You have a lot of different classes that you offer. You have art up in your art gallery a lot of times. Talk to me about the different aspects that Bloomington Playwright Projects have and how you see those changing over time.
I think the changes that we foresee are basically just building upon what we already do well. And the things that we don't do so well, maybe either getting rid of them or altering the way we do them.
And what are the things that you think that the Bloomington Playwright Project does?
Well, certainly our education programs, I think, are phenomenal. Breshawn Joyner, who is our education director, is really wonderful at doing outreach, first of all. I mean, she's in the schools all the time. She's doing she just finished a performance. She just did a wonderful program at Templeton, and it was a program for kids who don't read very well. Breshawn has a wonderful way of bringing out the best of any child, and I often think that if somebody can't read, it's not always just for the obvious reasons that it could be there could be a lot of reasons at play. And she found a way to get all these kids not only read out to read and read in front of people, but you know, have a spotlight on them and read these plays that they came up with together. So, I mean, to me, that is at the grassroots level is what theater should be. You know, always it should be educational and also training a future audience or a future artist. You know, at a very very grassroots level. And then, you know, we have classes. Our SODA, a School of Dramatic Arts, is really fantastic. And those classes we teach kids from preschool all the way up to adult. And then our summer programs, which are really popular. They usually sell out by January, which is incredible. Sandra Freund, who does the musical every year. And
it's Peter Pan this year.
Peter Pan isn't it? This year. And we're actually going to be flying people, which is really scary for me. In our new space, we're going to be flying people. So we'll see how that works out. And then Breshawn is going to be doing the Scottish play for our Shakespeare. We do and what I love about our.
Wait, I've got to stop you because I always know that one never names the Scottish play within the theater. We're not in the theater. Is it okay if I say the actual name of
Macbeth? Yeah, and actually, I don't even know why I did that. Well, it's just an actor superstition because I'm always saying it and people are always screaming at me whenever I'm in the theater. So just for those who are afraid of it, I guess I was watching.
I've never really understood the roots, you know, like why it is, but I know.
Well, there's actually, you know, plenty of stories where somebody said it and then things really went bad, including a Laurence Olivier production where scenery fell on people and things like that. So maybe there's a good reason.
You're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest is Rich Perez, who's the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Rich, talk to me a little bit about your experience this year of working with the playwright of Wives of Mannheim, which I think was just an extraordinary production at BPP.
Thank you. Me too. I think that play was, certainly one of my favorites that we've produced. And one of the reasons I love that play so much is, well, first of all, it's a period piece, and I really love the 40s. And I thought everybody connected to that, including the director, Jonathan Rest, who's a good friend of mine, will be coming back next year to direct a play called Chicken Snake. They really did their homework, and they really were specific about everything, including the behavior, including right down to the fine details of the set and the costumes. Brenda Forgas, who did the costumes. You know, one of the things I really love about the people we work with, they're so passionate about what they do, and because it's a small enough community, they can call out favors. And Brenda, who created this really fantastic costume plot on virtually nothing, our budgets, especially for a period piece. It's one thing because we do a lot of contemporary pieces to draw things from your own wardrobe, but this was very specific. And because she's very connected to costume people in town or, you know, vintage places, she just had a beautiful palette on stage. the playwright was really, he had never had seen, this was our Reva Shiner winner, Reva Shiner, who's one of our great patrons and who fully supports this this contest every year. It's a national contest. Was because of that contest we were able to bring this great play to, and you know, he's a provost at MIT, and so he certainly had his you know, he's had quite a bit of success, and you know, he came and he was here for the process and loved it, and you know, that's what makes my job so fun. When I see an artist come in, they see their work fully realized, and they're happy with it. I think we're doing our work. You know?
It was really a wonderful play.
Thanks.
For your other piece of music, you chose something that surprised me, and I'm really curious about this. You chose Gypsy, Tramps, and Thieves by Cher. Rich, tell me why you chose Gypsy, Tramps, and Thieves by Cher.
You know, it's very I wish there were one specific reason. I'll give you a few of the reasons. It was it's an early memory of mine from the 70s. For whatever reason, that song, I know one of the reasons is it intrigued me as a kid who loves storytelling. I think it's a great story, you know, this gypsy family who's on the road, and maybe ultimately it has something to do on some subconscious level of living the life of a gypsy, you know, in theater. Really, I just love the story, you know, this family, and then, you know, this little gypsy girl gets pregnant and the man leaves and, you know, she raises this, you know, it just has this real kind of folklorish feel to it. And Cher, and I'm a cheese ball. That's the other thing. And I think Cher's
define
music.
Cheese ball for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, just I like cheesy music. You know, I like Tom Jones. I like, you know, I like, you know, and a lot of this
Tony Orlando and Don,
right? And part of it, though, is just what I grew up with. And I think those were my early connections. I mean, because they had variety shows on television, and that was really the first time I was exposed to the entertainment industry. I just loved those shows and how goofy they were. And, you know, watching Cher and Sonny on television and, you know, the banter between them and how just funny they were. Same with Tony Orlando and Don and Carol Burnett, you know. I mean, to me, that's – I define all that stuff as cheesy, and yet at the same time, there's a real special place in my heart for that time in my life, you know.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama used to dance for the money they'd throw. Mama would do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel, sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good. Gypsies, tramps, and thieves, we'd hear it from the people of the town. They'd call us gypsies, tramps, and thieves. But every night all the men would come around and lay their money down.
We've been listening to Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves by Cher, and you're listening to Profiles on WFIU. I'm your host, Shauna Ritter, and our guest is Rich Perez, who's the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. Rich, talk to me a little bit. You know, there's been so much said about the role of art in culture. You know, what's the responsibility of artists? What's the role that it takes? Talk to me a little bit about how you envision the role of theater at this point in time, 2006.
Well, that's a big question.
It is.
And one that changes and morphs for me all the time. One of the places I'm with it now is in some ways, it's very simple. And that is, I am really affected by an audience coming into the theater, sitting down and having an exchange of ideas and emotions. And what I'm realizing, I think in some ways I was much more idealistic when I was younger. but not necessarily and I don't think any of that idealism has waned, but it's just coming. I used to think that an audience would come in, watch a play, and their lives would be changed. Well, I don't think it's that simple. What I love, and one of the things I think about when I'm programming a season, is what is that audience going to do when they leave the theater and they begin to talk amongst themselves? That's really where I think the exchange happens, where they can begin to hear other people's ideas about what the play meant, and are forced to reexamine their own position about something or become more clear about their position. To me, that's where the excitement happens. And that's why I love our talkbacks. We have a talkback the first Saturday of every show, and that gives the audience a chance to talk to the playwright to think about some things and share with the audience their thoughts on their work. And to me, that's where the exciting stuff happens. It's when there's an actual dialogue going, as opposed to watching television and then shutting it off and going to bed. Going to a pub or going to have dinner after the show and saying, you know, that pissed me off, or that really excited me, or that made me really happy to know that, you know, I'm right about something, or I never thought about something that way before.
You talked about the process before as being the thing about theater that really excites you. And we talked about the playwright, the director, and the actor. And you've just brought in the audience sort of as that fourth body that's involved in that process. What do you think that needs to happen with a play in order to make it really accessible for broader audiences?
I think the challenge is that because of television, because of so much entertainment is that fast-paced thing, that it's harder to find audiences for theater. And I think where we get into trouble is when we begin to try to dumb down theater to make it more like television or make it more like film. I think that's what happens. Is why would an audience want to go see a dumbed-down theater piece when they can stay at home and see and watch television? And not that all television is bad. I love some television. But for the most part, I think you know what you're getting. You know, it's a way to veg out and zone out. Whereas theater, you know, I think a big part when it's at its best is when it makes you think, when you have to be involved, when you have to take responsibility for your experience in it. And so I feel like, to get back to your question, we can't worry about trying to create the art so the audience accepts it. We have to actually raise the bar a little bit so the audience can say, this is a different experience and it's better because I am forced to be better. To me, that's what it should be. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are happy to just give give a full season of Neil Simon kind of stuff. And I'm a big Neil Simon fan. I'm playing Oscar Madison as Shawnee this summer. So it's not just about Neil Simon. It's about just Neil Simon, just having that kind of entertainment all the time.
Do you have a role that you long to play as an actor?
Oh, no. And by that I mean, you know, like for a lot of my actor friends, it's it's Hamlet or it's Lear, or quite often it's a Shakespearean thing. But for me, it was easier to answer that question when I wasn't acting, when I was acting more. Now it's when I read a new play and I think, wow, I need to play that role. I really love that role. Or it's a piece that I performed my one-person show season before last, and I think on some levels, that's where I am. I'm more interested in creating material for myself if I'm going to do that. That explores more who I am as opposed to who a character is. Unless there's a great character that comes along that I really have to play that addresses a lot of the issues that I want to explore as an actor, if that makes sense.
Can you talk just a drop about your one-person show?
It was called Secret Things. And it actually started out as my graduate thesis. And it was it's a form that I've always been fascinated by. Great solo performers like John Leguizamo and Eric Bogosian, Whoopi Goldberg, Lily Tomlin, people like that. I've always just really loved that that genre, and also really admired somebody who could stand there for an hour and a half and entertain us on a deep level. And so attempted it myself, and it was one of the best things I've ever done, just in terms of my own personal growth as an artist, because I've never really considered myself as a writer, even though I feel like we all have a writer in us, you know. And so it forced me to get in touch with that. Also, just the form, being on stage for an hour by myself, and also really exploring. It was autobiographical, so really getting in touch with a lot of those things that shape you, and it was sort of a coming of age story. So really going there on a deep level it's scary, because it's, you can't hide behind a character. It's you, and if the audience doesn't like it, well, in some ways they're saying, I don't like you, and you know.
But you feel like it was a great experience to do.
Yeah. And I feel the play still needs work, a lot of work. But I feel also that I got to some places that I would have never gotten to unless I forced myself to go there. And that's the challenge of also being in the position I am. Only I can challenge myself. So it's really about me taking on artistic challenges that are going to push me to another level. Nobody else is going to do it if I don't.
What's coming up next season at the Bloomington Playwrights Project that you're really excited about?
Well, the first slot, which opens September 14th, this is really exciting because we received our first NEA grant, National Endowment for the Arts grant.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So in 25 years, that's a really big deal. And especially for what it's for, it's I've always envisioned of wherever I was to produce a Latino festival of new plays. And so it was an idea that's sort of been in the back of my head for a while. And then when our development director asked me what I wanted to apply for this grant, what idea I had, I immediately mentioned that. And so we did, and we received the grant. And so we'll kick off the season with this festival. And we have playwrights coming from Arizona, California, New York, Chicago. And just it's a really exciting time, because one of my favorite groups from Chicago, Teatro Luna, which is an all-female Latina performing group, have a new play called Sex O. And so these actresses who are talking about what it is to be a Latina woman and the different worlds that they have to maneuver as far as sexuality goes and being performers and being women, you know, in this society. So it's really exciting.
Well, I can't wait. I'm really excited to hear that. I want to thank you, Rich, for being our guest on Profiles. We've been talking with Rich Perez, the producing artistic director of the Bloomington Playwrights Project. I'm Shauna Ritter. I'm your host. Thanks for listening.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in May of 2006. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. The recording engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Emily Blackland McCord, research assistant. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. In addition, this and other Profiles programs can be accessed through our website at wfiu.indiana.edu. For WFIU, thanks for listening.